I have been talking to some of the British pilots who have been making reconnaissance and photographing flights over northwest Germany. They belong to several squadrons which are part of the Air Force of the British Army in France. This force is under the direction of General Lord Gort, Commander-in-Chief of the British Army in the field. These reconnaissance planes are sent over Germany at such intervals as weather conditions and the informational needs of the Army chiefs determine. Two of the pilots with whom I talked were tall, lean, fit-looking Canadians. Within the strict limits imposed by the necessity of secrecy regarding this form of aerial activity, they told me something of their experiences and impressions. One of them had recently returned from his first reconnaissance over the Reich. German anti-aircraft batteries, he said, shelled him for some time after he crossed the border. He estimated that between 30 and 40 shells burst near his plane, but it was not hit. I asked him how he felt at the time. Well, he replied with a wide, slow smile, it was the first time we'd been under fire. For the first 45 minutes over Germany, the weather was good. After that, he said, there was too much cloud for photographing. He saw only three German planes in the air during the entire reconnaissance. As soon as he spotted them, he slipped into the clouds and they lost him. It was extremely misty the day I talked to these pilots at their flying field base. I asked one of them whether he could start on a reconnaissance flight in such conditions. He said it was possible, but that it would not be worthwhile unless weather conditions over Germany were sufficiently good for observation. Incidentally, this pilot remarked that they got excellent weather reports regarding Germany. It is a fact that much of Germany's weather is made in Great Britain and exported to the Reich. That is, the prevailing winds blow from the British Isles to Germany, so that the weather over the latter country can frequently be predicted from Great Britain. The objectives on this and other British flying fields and airdromes in France seem well camouflaged, and they have anti-aircraft defense. At another flying field, I saw squadrons of trim, handy-looking Army cooperation planes. These can be used not only for reconnaissance and photographing behind the enemy lines, but for combat work against ground forces in cooperation with British troops. There were also a number of baby planes which are employed by the Air Force as runabouts for officers who may have to move about quickly, and for general communications work. They are the air equivalent of the Army's motorcycle dispatch riders. We saw one officer who is still flying, who won fame and high decoration during the latter part of the World War. In an air fight with German planes, he was shot in the leg. He rammed a finger into the wound to slow up the bleeding, finished his job, returned to his base, and made his report. Then he said, "Boys, now you can take off the leg." The other day, he drove some distance to where his lost limb was buried and placed a bunch of flowers on the grave. These British air squadrons in France have a highly mobile organization. They can pack up and transfer from one base to another and be ready for operation again in a very few hours. In order to achieve this mobility, each squadron is equipped with a motorized kitchen in which food is cooked for the entire personnel of the squadron. There is a trailer tank for drinking water and a motorized electric generating plant for recharging the storage batteries of the planes. Each of the squadrons which are doing photographing over Germany has, in addition, a motorized film developing and printing unit which can turn out up to 3,000 photographic prints in 24 hours. While all this reconnaissance work is going on, while forward defensive positions are being perfected, while artillery emplacements are being further developed, and while the Army is preparing to meet the winter conditions of cold and wet, the military and the French civilian and the French civilians in the British zone are waiting to learn if, where, and when Hitler is going to attack. As to civilian opinion, the answer given by those Frenchmen with whom I have talked boils down to a few words. They say, with a characteristic shrug, "We are strong, the British are strong. We must wait." There are several schools of thought regarding German strategy in the immediate weeks to come. Some believe that Hitler will attempt merely to push the French troops out of that portion of the Reich territory which they now hold, and then remain on the defensive on the Western Front until the spring. Meanwhile, it is assumed by this same school that the Germans will continue and perhaps intensify their campaign at sea against merchant shipping and also their air attacks on military and naval objectives in Great Britain. Coupled with these tactics, it is believed, would be a pressing onward of the German peace offensive by propaganda in the newspapers, over the radio, and diplomatically through neutral countries. Another school of thought expects the Germans to make an attack in force on the Western Front in the near future. And recalling Hitler's habit of pulling surprises, wonders what may be in prospect. The approach of winter weather, however, with its rain and mud, which will severely limit the offensive mobility of a mechanized army, It will equally limit the areas in which German military leaders would be willing to undertake such an offensive, despite the fact that Hitler might like to attempt to replace soundness of military strategy by the element of surprise. Those who believe in the probability of an early German offensive make the following claims in support of their contention. They say that, with the conquest of Poland, Hitler now has the necessary striking force for such an attempt. They argue that, with the crippling power of the blockade working the 24 hours of the day and night, Hitler cannot afford to await the ultimate economic strangulation by Allied sea power. Finally, they claim that the gradual deterioration of German civilian morale with the concurrent growth of political unrest will force the Führer to make some dramatic military move. It is impossible at the moment to assess with any degree of certainty which of these viewpoints will prove correct. All that the British military command in France can do and is doing for the present is to prepare for any contingency to guard against any surprise enemy move with the aid of aerial reconnaissance and to wait. Meanwhile, French civilian life goes on fairly placidly. There has been no evacuation of the population, although plans have been made for such action if necessary. In the forward area of the British military zone, the peasants are now gathering the last of the harvest in fields which may someday be plowed by shells. The farmers are still living in houses along the frontier, which, in the event of active military operations, will either be razed to the ground to give a clear field of fire for the defending troops, or will be used as protective works. As you drive along the roads in this area, there are even signs of optimism regarding the future. You frequently see new houses being built on this possibly future battlefield. Here and there, new road bridges are being constructed over railway lines. The contents of jewelry stores, which would be dissipated in a second by a single bomb or shell, still glitter in the show windows. Save for the absence of the men called to the colors and the nightly blackout against air raids, life seems to flow along in this strangest of all wars.